how to start?
Well, you know, it's just writing. I mean,
here's something important to remember about dialogue.
Every word matters.
No, it doesn't.
They're vital.
I want to go to this place that I think it needs to go to.
The only thing that counts is what you see on the screen.
I will write like 4, 5, 6 hours a day.
And it will be a voice made of ink and rage.
Okay, I'm really glad you asked me that question.
Whether it's through art, animation, or filmmaking, Julian Curry has dedicated his life's works to telling stories and helping others tell theirs. These days, he's best known for his work in paper, puppetry, and animation. His latest project, Gruff, a paper-made short about the relationship with his late dad, is out now on YouTube. In this interview, we talked about what led him into animation, the origin of the story Gruff, crowdfunding, and how to start a campaign, dealing with the pressure that comes from social media, future projects, and much more. Here's my conversation with Julian Curry.
I mean, I've always loved escapism in general. I've always loved to escape into different worlds that started with fantasy and sci-fi like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and kind of a generation of practical filmmaking that took me down the rabbit hole of acting, then into theater directing, and then into film directing. It was a long journey, but I eventually landed at directing short films. And shortly before the pandemic, I had been trying to crank out as many short films as possible to just get practice and to iterate and learn. The pandemic hit, and I didn't want that momentum to stop, so I thought, why not become an animator? Foolishly, perhaps. I have a background in fine art, and I said, well, why not combine those two? That's what animation is. It's fine art meets filmmaking. And I quickly realized I did not have the patience to hand-draw 12 frames or 20 frames a second, much less do the stop-motion aspect of that. So that's how I sort of stumbled into this puppeteering approach with paper that hopefully looks like an animated film and gives that same sensation of animation, of 3D animation, but allowed a little bit more creative freedom with how those characters are manipulated.
Were you learning from stop motion, or how did you kind of find this middle ground? Was it mostly just through experience?
Just experimentation. It did start with me wanting to do a sort of animation hybrid where I would hand draw or hand paint all the elements of these characters, whether that's their forearms, their hands, their faces, scan them into the computer, and then rig them and puppeteer them that way. That's how this all started technically. And I found that it was just so rigid and lacked texture and lacked lighting and dimension. I realized you could probably add all those things in there, but I thought, if I'm going to be spending that much time bringing this to life, why not just bring it to life in real life and hit record? So I didn't exactly look to puppet filmmaking for inspiration. I took my inspiration from animated film. What do those designs look like? What do those environments look like? Because that's what audiences are used to now. Digital animation has really pushed itself closer to photorealism than ever. And so photorealism is the standard. So fortunately, everything in my short film is photoreal because it is real. So I've got that going. But there's an artistic element to the lighting and the composition that we've grown accustomed to with 3D animated films that I kind of had as my standard visually for the film. So it was experimentation. Literally every single scene was learning a new approach and learning a better way to iterate this process. And I, to be completely honest, have not mastered it. I have a finished short film, and there's something to be said for that, but I have so much that I still need to refine and want to explore, whether it's to do with movement, expression, on the post-production side of things. There's a lot that I want to continue to refine. So it was an experiment, and it continues to be an experiment.
So I talk to a lot of screenwriters, and normally the first idea is a character or a plot or some small idea. What was the origin of the idea for Gruff? Or is it more about you were building a few characters and then the story came later? What's kind of that process?
Well, a lot of indie filmmakers, or at least the messaging that I've received as an indie filmmaker, is the only way to get into big film festivals is to have a film that has name actors or name talent attached to it, right? And to that point, I had not done anything like that. I'd been working with my friends and really, really having fun experimenting with just collaborating with friends and fellow filmmakers. But as I kept doing that, I realized, okay, how am I going to surpass that level? I have to have that, what should I call it? I don't know, the star picture, the festival darling type of movie. So what's a script that I can write that could have a really easy shoot day with maybe two name actors in a room, solid screenplay, and then film some other elements around that that they don't have to necessarily be involved in? And so I wrote one for that. That was the very, very, very early genesis of what Gruff ended up becoming. So it was going to be a pseudo live action promotional vehicle for myself as a filmmaker for film festivals, but, you know, pandemic. And so I kind of dusted off the old outlines and notes from that story and said, well, if I just make this entirely on my own and then show the finished film to name talent, that can get me the notoriety that I think I would need. So 3 years later, I ended up realizing I didn't need the name talent, and I worked with some amazing actors that I cast myself. And now the brand and the film is the star rather than the stars of the film, which has been an absolutely surreal journey. But it does just go to show you that you don't have to follow all the standards and the rules that the gatekeepers set. You know, those rules exist for a reason. And it is true, star talent can get you your foot in the door, but so can really damn good filmmaking and innovation and experimentation. And I think that social media really puts the power in the hands of the filmmaker to be their own publicist, to be their own marketing vehicle. So I've learned a lot of ancillary lessons along the way about filmmaking through making this kind of on social media. But yeah, it started as potentially a live action short film, but due to the pandemic, I kind of got into my sketchbooks and designed it as an animated type film.
It seems like, kind of looking at your Instagram and your own TikTok as well, I saw a lot of comments that were just like, how do I give you money? Which is a very interesting, predicament to be in, or nice situation to be in. When did you start tell me about the GoFundMe and the process of that, and how you think about some of your marketing and just showing little clips of what you're building at the time?
Well, it all started with me posting a video on TikTok about kind of what I'd been up to in the last year, whether that was experimentations with Gruff, or I was doing this paper approach for a feature documentary for almost a year. And I'd been kind of off the map social media wise. My wife and I were going to have a Christmas party here at the house. I knew I was going to be seeing a lot of friends for the first time in a couple of years. So I edited this little video together that could be my answer to what have you been up to for the last year, because it's very hard to explain this process, this filmmaking, animation, puppetry approach verbally. You just kind of have to see it. So that was another reason. Edited this little video. It went viral on TikTok. And a couple of my friends called me up and they said, hey, I really think that you should start a crowdfunding campaign so that you can finish that short film, so that you don't have to be taking those other side jobs. I'd had a pretty bad taste in my mouth from crowdfunding from a previous feature film years ago, and I just felt embarrassed to ask people for money. But as you said, people were literally asking, where can I send you money? So I said, I guess I'll put myself out there. I'll try and be as humble as possible and say, look, here's what I'm asking for. I'm going to make this film no matter what, but it's just a matter of taking the time off from other side jobs to do it, or chipping away at it in my own personal time, kind of as a hobby. And that campaign was funded in a month, which was December 2022 into January 2023. And so for the most part of 2023, I've been working on Gruff exclusively, with a couple side things that were just for fun, good collaborations. But yeah, it worked. And I was very surprised. It was such a different experience when people already are familiar with the project and then they want to contribute to it, rather than the other way around, where the crowdfunding campaign is the education vehicle and is how you're trying to bring awareness to the project. It's a very, very difficult process, but I think I got a TikTok made it easy for me.
Would you say there's something different about like the mindset you just said as well? So it's like, I remember when I was writing scripts and you're sending them out, and you're like, please help me, is what it feels like, as opposed to like, hey, I'm going to make this film. You know, you can come along for the ride or not. It's more of a like, it's a different train that's moving forward. Can you talk any more, a little bit about that mindset?
I think in any field, people want to be a part of something that's already in progress. They want to jump onto a moving train. Obviously, there will be brave people out there who will help you build the train and who want to be there from the beginning. But for the most part, people just want to pour gasoline onto a fire that's already burning. And so obviously, every project has to start somewhere. And not every filmmaker has the luxury to start a campaign when there's already footage and there's already, you know, behind the scenes footage or actual footage from the film that they can show as, okay, it's happening. This is real. It's not just made up. So I think no matter what part of the process you are in when starting a campaign, just remember that people like to see that progress is happening. So whether that's concept art or storyboards or people who are already attached, the ball is rolling. And if that takes a little bit of money up front, I think that that's way more advantageous than starting a campaign when there's nothing and it's just the idea. I would recommend starting a campaign kind of in that process so people feel like they're joining a movement rather than starting a movement. That's just going to be so much slower and less exciting. So I did not make that decision intentionally. I'm only saying that today because I just stumbled upon that. But I'm a big fan of Shark Tank, that show where, you know, they pitch business ideas. And I get so many filmmaking lessons from that because it's so true. All these multimillionaire tycoons, they're only really interested in joining something that already has momentum, whether that's a small company, but it's selling out their products really quickly, or it's a giant company that's only going to become bigger. They like seeing that there's a commitment to the cause and that there's that business, that story, that person is going to move forward with or without a deal. And as far as crowdfunding goes, when the average Joe who is really struggling to make ends meet, especially in this economy, is considering donating $5, you really have to make it worth their while. This is going to be finished. This isn't going to be one of those Kickstarter campaigns that just disappears and you never hear about it. You're not throwing your money away to the wind. This thing is going to happen with or without me. So I just want to support it. So I think that's a helpful mindset when it comes to crowdfunding. It's just knowing that people want to believe in something that's already started.
So there's, you know, donations, obviously, there's followers, which you have a lot of followers. Was there any kind of surprise, positive accountability from social media, like an obligation to move forward or faster or anything like that?
There was some pressure, for sure. And there were a couple of videos where I had set pretty broad stroke deadline goals for, I would love to be done by the end of summer, you know, fingers crossed, or I'd love to be done by the end of the year. And didn't hit either of those deadlines. But it wasn't exactly a, if I don't hit this deadline, you know, everyone gets their money back. Life just happened. And like I said earlier, this whole film has just been a matter of experimentation. So things came up. There were scenes that ended up being so much more difficult to achieve than others. So yeah, time and life happened. So there were times when I definitely felt embarrassed or called out that people thought, oh, this is just not happening. Like, dude, you're not. I tried not to remember as many specifics as possible because I just had to get the work done. And there were a few months here and there where I wasn't posting any updates because I was working on scenes that would have spoiled the whole movie. I only shared footage from like the first three and a half minutes of the movie across the whole year and a half that I've been posting about it. So once I got into the second two-thirds of the movie, I couldn't be posting anything. So people just started forgetting about it, calling me out saying, dude, why is it taking so long? This thing's never going to happen. was it Grand Theft Auto 6? Like, we're going to get that before we get Gruff. So it was just kind of becoming a meme almost that this wasn't going to be finished. And I knew how much I was working. Nobody else saw that, though. So it was tough. And I definitely didn't feel like there was, like, I was making it for them. This whole project has been about me making this project for me and figuring out if it worked. So I didn't have those voices in my head as far as like, oh, I want to make them happy. And, you know, I'm disappointing them because it's not coming out, because I knew that I was taking my time working on something that was going to be better and that I would be proud of. It was just going to take a little bit more time, and that when it got released, they would see where all that work and time went into. So it's cool having so many people who do support you and who are interested in the project, but it's also the internet, and people are going to say weird things. They're going to say disheartening things, and you just have to be able to block out that noise and keep your nose in the work and concentrate on the concept and the vision that you set out to do and not be influenced by what those thousands of people might be saying. So I let it encourage me and excite me when the energy was positive, and I just tried to block it out when it wasn't.
I think there's some idea, I think it's from the magicians like Penn and Teller, and it's like sometimes magic is just spending more time than anyone might reasonably expect on something. Would you say you were kind of striving for your own, you know, level of perfectionism with this, or how do you think? Because it's just the idea of it, there's so much time already goes into it. You know, how do you think about all that, or how do you stay persistent when you're trying to stay at such a high bar?
I really don't know. I'm not a very patient person, so I don't know how the hell I pulled this off. I like iterating and posting and getting things done quick. So I'm still surprised that I spent this long on it. I don't really know. I don't know where that motivation came from. It's just kind of proving it to myself that I could. When I was in high school, I was terrible at math and science and everything. And I still have this little work of art. It's not a work of art. It's a doodle. It was in one of my math workbooks. The Return of the King had just come out, and I was obsessed. And I did this drawing of Minas Tirith, the Gondorian castle. And in stick figures, I did a bunch. I did like all the orc troops lined up outside the castle. And I think it must have been 3,000 to 4,000 little stick figures that I did. And there was just something very like mundane and peaceful about that iteration and making these grids of all these little things. And it wasn't, and if someone saw that and said, how did you have the patience to do that? It's like, well, it wasn't patience. It was just kind of a flow state. You just, okay, it looks like a lot. And it looks like you spent an immense amount of time on it. But it wasn't necessarily about, oh, I got to get to the end. It's just enjoying that process and being in the moment. So, yeah, you know, I haven't really thought about it very much, but I guess that's the answer to it, is that I enjoyed every moment of it, and I wanted to make every scene and every part of it as good as possible. So it was not 3 years of work. It was just one day of reveling in the work, and then another day of reveling in the work, and another day, and another day. So I didn't see this deadline or like finish the film as my motivating factor. It was just a daily wake up, make a coffee and make some good art, and we'll do it again tomorrow. And you add up enough of those and hopefully you'll get a finished film.
How has this changed the way you might think about future ideas? If you have 10 ideas for what's next, do you have different barriers or barometers, or how you measure which one's good enough that it might take this amount of time to do?
Oh man, that's such a good question, because I have so many stories that I want to tell, but knowing that this is such a slow process really makes me take a pause before jumping into it. Like, this has to be a story, a world, a project that I really, really, really care about, because it might take up the next couple of years of my life. So I'm still figuring that out. I'm still figuring out what will be that next thing. But what I'm leaning towards is not a longer short film like Gruff, which is about 9 minutes, but doing more short form experiments that might not be considered full on short films, but just captured moments. So I don't know, something like seeing a medieval knight like sharpening his sword or something, just as an opportunity for me to play with new articulation in the puppets and with, you know, doing more exterior environments, little practice sessions almost that could have a story to them if you thought about it deeply enough, but are really just there to help me refine this craft a little bit more so that when the next big one comes, I have some more skills at my disposal. But I also do want to collaborate either with other companies, other artists, and, you know, hopefully have them front some of the costs and some of the work as well. I don't see myself wanting to do another short film entirely by myself again. This one was definitely to prove it to myself that I could. I had to do everything myself between the visual effects, the puppeteering, sound mixing, all that stuff, so that the next time when I'm working with professionals who are way better at that stuff than me, I have that experience and we can kind of talk that same language. So whatever's next, it'll hopefully be faster. I'll hopefully have more help. But in the meantime, I do just kind of want to practice and sharpen those skills on shorter shorts.
Did you discover, you know, from wearing every hat, did you discover you had a favorite part of the process where you definitely wouldn't hand off, you know, this part, anything like that?
A favorite part where I do not want to hand off? Is that what you said?
Like a favorite job, you know, you'd want to be doing if you were to, even if you had a team.
Honestly, there is something that I love about every single aspect of it. And there's something that I hate about every single aspect of it. So it's really hard to pick just one where if it's building the puppets themselves, I really like the challenge of bringing that to life and then puppeteering it. But then there are days where I'm like, man, I wish I could just be operating the camera and some professional puppeteer could be doing that where, you know, they're on some kind of scaffolding that it's much more comfortable for them rather than me straining my arm above a table. And then there are some days when there's magic and I puppeteer something and I'm like, man, I love doing this. I'm going to puppeteer every character for every short film down the line. So I don't think there's any one answer besides just directing it, directing the vision. I think that will still allow me to dip my toe into a lot of different fields and a lot of different jobs, but still just being at the helm of the vision, I think would be the priority.
Something you said a minute ago kind of reminds me. I've heard Tim Ferriss say he thinks of future projects very much as experiments as opposed to like, this is what I'm doing forever. And there's all that responsibility and publicity to that. Can you talk any more just about like thinking of things in experiments, especially when it comes to art?
Well, it certainly takes a lot of pressure off of you when you don't see, when you don't put your final product on this pedestal of, this has to be the best. A phrase that I like to repeat a lot to filmmakers and collaborators is, let's not try to be the best, let's just do our best. And I think that helps you daily challenge yourself to your own standards rather than otherworldly standards, especially in film. You know, we see what major studios are making. We see what other filmmakers are making on Instagram. And there's this like exterior pressure, but okay, that's them and their resources. What can you do? And when you look at what you can do, whether that's with the resources that you have available to you or more philosophically, like what you're capable of as an artist, those standards are different. And it really only matters that you are practicing living up to your best potential. And that takes a lot of relief out of it because we know our limits better than anybody else. So if we know that we're pushing our limits, that's all that matters. And that makes every work of art an experiment and a work of practice. Yes, you do have to see things through and you do have to complete them so that you can move on to the next thing. and you always have to challenge yourself to make your best better. But that's your job. That's not the world's job. You know, don't invite the world into that journey. You're the only one who can challenge yourself to do better. And so, yeah, it was a really trippy experience finally releasing this short film, because what was something that a lot of people were looking forward to and had such high expectations, I still see as just an experiment. Yeah, we bought some champagne here at the house and kind of celebrated when it was released, but it didn't really feel like, oh man, the big thing is done. I just felt like, all right, cool. That was all right. Let's see what I can do better. Let's see what's next. I thought I was just going to collapse and melt into a pool of tears. Like, yes, it's done. But I kind of just woke up with a pep in my step, being like, all right, that was cool. That worked out. That experiment was successful, but I know where it's janky and I know where I want to improve. So what's that next project where I can do that? So it just feels like a process rather than a finish line. It's just one long journey rather than a race.
Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Before you take off, I want to give you a free gift. I'm giving you my first book, Ink by the Barrel, for free. That's the digital download and audiobook at brockswenson.com. Inside this book, you'll learn how to annihilate writer's block by embracing Elizabeth Gilbert's playful trickster mentality. You can learn to weaponize your anxiety with Kevin Kelly's Different is Better approach, and learn how to defend your time with Ryan Holiday's calendar anorexia mindset. There's just a few other ideas in the book, Ink by the Barrel. It's also based on over 400 interviews I've done right here on Creative Principles. So go steal that book right now, Ink by the Barrel, to learn how to be a prolific writer. You can get your copy, that's digital download and audiobook, at brockswinson.com, brockswinson.com. And if it's your first time here, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.